Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is an author, Mary Eberstadt. She's a senior fellow with the Faith and Reason Institute in Washington, D.C., and she's put together a new book called Primal Screams. And Mary, it's good to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here, Jerry. Thank you.
It's nice to meet you on the radio, and tell us, what is this book all about, and what does the title mean, Primal Screams?
So the book is about identity politics, which we all know is a very hot issue and a very divisive issue. And the argument of the book is that identity politics has not been well understood, that the reason there is this panicked flight to collective identities, whether sexual identities, gender identities, racial identities, etc., is that people have become disconnected from their usual way of constructing identity, and that is through the family and extended family. The argument of the book is that since the sexual revolution of the 1960s, the family has suffered a number of demographic hits. It's broken by divorce, by not forming in the first place. There's been the shrinking of the family, et cetera, and a lot of numbers that I marched through lightly in the book. But the upshot of all of this, Jerry, is that we have fewer people to call our own. And the old ways of answering the question, who am I, by reference to I am a mother, I am a cousin, I am a sister, and so on, are not available to many people. And this, I think, is where the clamor over identity is coming from.
That's so interesting. And by the way, just recently I did an interview with Dr. Judith Reisman, who's an author about Kinsey, and one of her main points, and she's written several books about it, and they're all basically the same book, making the same point, but just documenting it from different perspectives, that Kinsey's research was hopelessly flawed because he had a bad sample. In other words, the sample was not representative, but he passed it off as if this was representative, and that's what gave us the sexual revolution, and here we are all these years later struggling to try and pick up the pieces of the broken family. Very interesting.
Well, up until now, there has not been wide acknowledgement of the ways in which the sexual revolution really has changed the world. But what I'm arguing is that, you know, over half a century into this record, we can't ignore what's happening. I mean, look at the United States right now. We have declining life expectancy in the working class for the first time in recorded history. And those, quote, excess deaths, many of them are what are called deaths of despair. They're being brought on by alcohol and drug abuse. Now, why is that? We've also seen a rise in divisiveness, the way people in public life talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And I think there's this general sense that something's really wrong in this country. And what I'm trying to do is get at the root of it and explain that the way many of us are living now is not the way that we were designed to live. We're social creatures. We're not meant to live in the absence of family and community. And I think trying to live in this artificial way is what's causing all of the acrimony out there and gave rise to identity politics in the first place.
Oh, that's very, very good point. There's a Bible verse that comes to mind from the Psalms where it says that God has put the lonely in families. The title is Primal Screams. What does that mean?
It means that the clamor over identity is coming from a place that is pre-political. It's coming from this primordial place that's a place of great loss. These sound like abstractions, but they can be measured with statistics. So, for example, in part of the book, I talk about the explosion of what are called loneliness studies in sociology. If you look at any advanced nation in the world, there is a great loneliness epidemic among the elderly. Now, why is this? It wasn't always like this. This is what happens when the family has fractured and imploded. And a lot of people reach old age without having anybody to rely on in their lives. So that's one measure of what's gone wrong that is directly traceable to the sexual revolution. And then there are other ones. The rise in divorce has in turn help to fuel behavioral problems and psychiatric problems. There is a lot of new literature about psychiatric problems among young people, for example. And, you know, when we talk about the causes of these things, usually people will say, well, you know, it's about the president we happen to have right now, or it's about some abstraction like the patriarchy or something like that. But I think these share a root cause in the dissolution of the family. And not only do I think that, but there's a lot of evidence in the book to prove that point. So when we talk about what's wrong with our politics, what's wrong with our country, we need to understand that we're dealing with a very damaged population on account of the fallout of the sexual revolution.
Yeah. Social media, has that helped or has that actually hurt, or is it a great tool that can be used if used the right way? Your comments on that in terms of your overall thesis. I'm talking about like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah. I think on balance, it does more harm than good, because what happens is that people fly to these online virtual communities and try to find a substitute for what they're missing, which is a robust, real community at home. But the main point here is that although the internet makes a lot of things worse, it is also not the root cause of the problem. How do I know that? Because identity politics predates the internet. Most scholars agree that identity politics was founded by a document that came out in 1977 by a group of black feminists. And the document essentially said, we know that we're the only people we can rely on at this point. It's a very sad statement. It's about how we will engage in collective protection and collective support because there's no one else we can rely on. Well, why couldn't they rely on their families? I think the answer is what we're seeing in 1977 when that document was issued is the beginning of the destruction of the family in some cases, and it's weakening in many more cases. And that's why we have these groups, whether virtual or in person, these groups are trying to do what the family does better, and they're poor substitutes for the real thing.
Well, you know, one of the things, I mean, I don't want to sound politically incorrect here, but it is a fact that with the rise of the welfare state and the great war on poverty that LBJ, you know, commissioned and so forth in the 1960s, they designed things in such ways that inadvertently, or maybe by design, no, I doubt by design, but anyway, they broke the back of the urban family by chasing dad out of the house, giving benefits to unwed mothers to have more but not to have dad around the house. And so you end up with literally millions, I guess, of single parent households, and it's just not helpful for the children, for the women, for the men, for society at large.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the state has not played a great role in the breakdown of the family. Awesome. And as you described, Jerry, the financing of the broken family is, of course, something that just encouraged more of the same. But at the same time, I think the solution to what ails us is not going to be political. If you look at how you put the family back together, it's hard to imagine any political incentives that will do that. I think what we need is a kind of public awakening to what is essentially a public health crisis. It's a spiritual crisis. And I think that's the way that restoration is going to come about. And in order to get there, we have to first diagnose the problem correctly. The problem isn't some abstraction. The problem isn't, you know, the patriarchy or American whatever-ism. The problem is that we are social creatures, and since the sexual revolution, we've been living as if we're something else.
Now, most of this book you wrote, but you have some concluding essays by others, including Rod Dreher. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, Rod Dreher, whose work is, of course, very pertinent here, and Mark Lilith, because we wanted a liberal, and he is the foremost liberal opponent of identity politics, and the entrepreneur Peter Thiel, who is very interested in philosophy, and in particular the philosophy of a French philosopher named René Girard, who talks about how related human beings are, how we learn from each other, et cetera. And all of that is also pertinent to the argument. So what we were trying to do with the book is start a conversation and get diverse points of view to kick it out there in the first place.
And where do churches fit in the grand scheme of all this?
Well, that's a big part of the conversation. So we all know that people, especially young people, have stopped going to church in the numbers that they used to. And the problem with that is not only what it's going to do to their souls, the problem is also that church Christianity provides a rock-solid identity. If you are a Christian, then you have figurative brothers and sisters, maybe your brothers and sisters in the church, and your identity is, I am a child of God. So one problem with people not going to church is that they then remove what used to be a pretty solid hunk of how we identify ourselves. And that's part of the confusion that's out there, too. So the problems in the family and the problems in the churches are deeply related.
You know, it's funny. I just on a personal anecdote, I can remember 40 years ago as a, you know, kind of reborn, newly Christian fellow and just so excited. But I had this one day visit to England on my way to India as a student and so forth. But anyway, what was fascinating was I felt lonely that one day in England. And yet within a couple of hours, I met some Christian brothers and sisters in Christ. And we had this fellowship, and it was as if we had known each other all our lives. And I, by the end of the day, I was really happy, you know, before I flew off to India the next day. It was like, because I'm part of this worldwide family, you know, in Christ, which is really fascinating. And the contrast was I knew somebody back home who was extremely lonely, and that person was living in New York City, just surrounded by literally millions and millions of other people. But that person was specifically and explicitly anti-Christian and extremely lonely. I just thought that was an interesting contrast.
That's a great story, and it absolutely nails the point that what's ailing us, I think, is a spiritual deficit. And although we can talk about politics and how it might help heal our country and put people on a better path, I think ultimately we are talking about the need for a spiritual revival based on the understanding that living the way people have lived since the sexual revolution has caused a lot of damage, and we want to stop the suffering out there.
Yeah.
And I think the spiritual level is very much in play here. It's what we need most.
How about a comment about the extended family as opposed to the nuclear family? And we have about a minute to wrap up.
Well, traditionally, human beings lived in extended families. So all of the rancor that's been dumped on the poor nuclear family is a little bit unjustified. But whether you look at the nuclear family or the extended family, both have shrunk and both have gotten more atomized. And that, I think, is what's ailing us. And increasingly, it's coming out in our very vitriolic politics, especially identity politics. We need to understand what's driving that.
Well, do me a favor. I've interviewed Dr. William Donahue before, and he uses that word, too, atomized. We have about 40 seconds left. What does that mean, atomized?
It means that there's been a rise, for example, in solitary households, people who are living all by themselves. There's been a shrinking of the family. Fewer people have siblings, cousins, aunts, uncles, etc. So any way you look at it, there's a demographic squeeze on the family that means that we just have fewer people to call our own. And because we are the kind of creatures we are, we're made to live in community.
Yeah.
And trying to live as if we can just reinvent the rules and live as we please on our own and disconnected from people is causing a number of social problems, including our most pressing ones.
Sure. Okay, we're out of time. MaryEberstadt.com. Eberstadt is spelled E-E-B-E-R-S-T-A-D-T. E-B-E-R-S-T-A-D-T. The name of the book, Primal Screams. Thank you, Mary, for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jerry.
Sure. Great. Thanks. Bye-bye.